Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of our draft recap and taking a look at all nine players and kind of the path in which the draft played out. We particularly focused on that in part one, where Jake Vogel and I. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thank you. How about you?
I'm doing well still. Jake and I talked through a lot of how the offensive tackles were coming off the board, some good comments about Jake, about the start of some runs at cornerback where the Ravens got into it, and at wide receiver, I think, where the Ravens got one of the good leftover players. So we certainly mentioned Tez Walker in that light. Some of the value decisions the Ravens had to make between a developmental left tackle and a guy who's more ready to go right away. And had some questions, certainly, that comes up about the Rosengarten pick. Also some good hope. I don't want to think that I'm a negative Nelly about this, but I do feel the need to pull the Ravens public back to neutrality about Rosengarten rather than outright optimism that you would hear on a Ravens press conference or a player introduction. So he's a very polished mirror guy, but he is a guy who's still got a lot to learn and a lot of growth left to go in terms of his body in particular. So without further ado, let's move back to where we were in the draft, which is in round four. We just finished the Walker pick. So a little bit later in round four, the Ravens have another opportunity at number 130. And we had several players. You were there on at this point and we had several players highlighted on the board that we liked. And one of them was the guy they ended up getting, TJ Tampa.
Yeah, absolutely. For many people, TJ Tampa was a second or third round pick, on the consensus board for sure. And for the Ravens to be able to double dip at a position of need, especially 2025 need, and get such a value, it made all the sense in the world. Even though, a lot of us were clamoring for an offensive guard at that point or an additional tackle, I think the tackles had kind of dried up. But we were looking for Mahogany, who continued to fall on day three, but Tampa was just an extreme value. Watching him, I don't really worry too much about his testing speed. I know he was a 4.6 guy. To me, it didn't really show up that negatively in the tape that I was able to watch. He hits really hard. Sometimes he leaves his feet in a way that maybe isn't the best. But he is a strong tackler. He likes to come downhill towards guys, and he has some good ball skills, which, probably, put him in that initial second to third round range, just the kind of player that he was at Iowa State. Was really impressive. He has good length, kind of your Pete Carroll cover three looking corner. If you think of Richard Sherman, these longer corners that run a little bit slower, that's just kind of the prototype that you think of. But this guy, I believe can develop into a press cover man or press man cover corner. That also is effective in zone and can kick inside and cover some tight ends and cover some big slot receivers as well. I liked what he did in the middle of the field, and I believe against some slot receivers. I think he's a really solid player that's going to hopefully get some reps, something that Ken and I talked about on the day three show, was, getting him involved in his rookie season. I don't remember the exact number of snaps you were talking about for the season, but well over 100 coverage snaps, and that could be due to blowouts. Hopefully that the Ravens are winning games, and then
works for me.
obviously the unfortunate thing could be injury where he would come in, but it would be really good to kind of get him integrated, see what you have at the position, and then evaluate the future for Marlon Humphrey and the future for Brandon Stevens, and also at that point, you would have an idea about Nate Wiggins.
Yeah, could completely agree. And that's some good stuff there. So let's start with the franchise building component of that. So you've got Brandon Stevens, who will be entering year four. So far, they have not gotten a contract to extend him early. Now, this would be the time to extend him early, probably not after his fourth season. They could do it during the fourth year, but really now would be the time to get the best divisible benefit off the table, like they just did with Bateman. You know, it kind of makes sense in the same way. Now, Bateman, they had to make a decision on a fifth-year option that helped both sides to get to a point where, you know, they could reach a deal early. In the case of Stevens, you've got a good player entering year four who may be saying, I really want to test free agency and see how much I can get. I got one big payoff, lifetime, this is it. And and I want to maximize that. I wouldn't disparage him for that in any way, but the Ravens will benefit if there's stand to benefit if there's divisible benefit on the table that they can give the player more security and get that at a lower cost. So Tampa provides the backup. They now have, I think, four very solid corners for this year. You know, a position of weakness, much as it was going last year, should be a real position of strength. The other thing, they really needed to get younger. And obviously, Stevens and Humphrey are aging up, particularly not just on an age scale, because Stevens still isn't that old. Humphrey's older. But they're aging up in terms of their being paid market value for their for their services. Whereas Pepe and JAD aren't in a bad spot for that right now, except they don't look like they're going to be NFL players. So in my case, I would not expect to get anything out of either of those players at this point. I know I've heard various responses from people like Pepe, who like Pepe or who like JAD. But honestly, JAD's ability to find the football is nothing like what Tampa's is right now. Tampa's a very good in-phase guy. And what I liked about him, what I think will make him better than his speed, is I think not only does he press, because you want to do that as a bigger cornerback, and he's not a huge cornerback in terms of weight, but he has the good length for it. excuse me, but when he does run in phase with a receiver, he's a very good hand fighter. And there's two things that can lead to. It can lead to cutting off space at the sideline effectively, but just distracting that receiver costs him speed. So even if he's running next to a Tez Walker, who's 0.2 of a second faster on the 40, Walker's not necessarily going to outrace him easily, because he's going to constantly have to deal with this. Get off of my arm, get off of my arm, get off of my arm. It's the thing that he'll be there. And that just goes on down the road. That's also something that cornerbacks use, is keeping their hand on the receiver when in phase to look back and to give themselves a chance to look back and find the football. And Tampa's ball skills would tell you that he's a good guy doing that. And you can also see it on tape if you want to. His metrics in 2023, absolutely outstanding. Not quite as good as Wiggins, but still great. 4.9 yards per target and a 54.8 opposing passer rating. It's the 24th best. Wiggins was the 10th best. So that's a couple pretty freaking great corners. And 4.3 and 4.9 yards per target would have both been in the top five in the entire NFL this last season. So that's pretty fantastic. Actually, would have both been in top five, because Ronald Darby was five, fifth, 5 point something.
Fantastic numbers on Tampa, as well as Wiggins. And to get him in the fourth round was pretty special. All of this is on paper. Just like Eric DaCosta said in his, recap press conference, there are going to be players in this draft that aren't as good as they believe, but they're also going to be players that are better than they expected. And I that's a pretty obvious kind of statement. But when you think about it, it's very true as well. Tampa has the chance to be even better, or, I don't want to bash another fourth round player. I like him still, but Tylan Wallace was a wide receiver that I really liked. A lot of Ravens fans thought was extreme value getting him in the fourth round a number of years ago. And, to this point hasn't done much except, helped secure a win last year against the Rams on a punt return. And he's been a valuable special teamer other than that. I do have higher hopes for TJ Tampa than what Tylan Wallace has been to this point of his career, and they're different positions. But I just kind of want to set that bar of, this is a fourth rounder we're talking about. And when players fall that far, there has to be some sort of reason for it. But all that being said, I am optimistic, just like I have been in previous seasons, about guys that we get that are extreme values on the consensus board.
Yeah, consensus number 50 pick, and the Ravens get him at 130. It doesn't get a whole lot better than that. I'm not aware of a medical with Tampa. Now, it doesn't mean there's not one. I think there was something with Wiggins, by the way, about a flexor strain that occurred at the might have been at the combine, might have been at a pro day. I'm not sure which, but that did happen, and apparently he felt some pains. Hopefully nothing comes of that. But in Tampa's case, Anthony Averett might be a reasonable comp for him, also a fourth round draft pick. And in terms of playing time, Anthony Averett got like 65 snaps as a rookie, and I think 200 in his second year. And those are rough numbers. And they weren't coverage snaps. That's total snaps. That's not a terrible developmental track, but I'd like Tampa to be 50% ahead of that for both years. I'd like him to get like 100, 300 would be kind of like a minimum I'd like to see from him. And with Stevens in year four, who knows? I mean, he could be playing over 300 snaps very easily in 2025.
Oh, yeah, completely agree. Stevens was practically a full-time every single snap starter this past year.
And in year three, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the same track would be awesome for a guy like TJ Tampa. That would be great.
All right. Great value. As we mentioned, I think I've covered everything I wanted to say about him. Good ball skills too. Seven passes defense, two other interceptions in his final year here. He just turned 22 in March. Not the youngest, but not the oldest corner. Wiggins is younger by a year and almost a half. But there's plenty of older corners in this class too. And Tampa's right. A guy they'll get first contract value out of, and they're pretty darn good chance he's a good corner entering that second contract. And if he is, he's a good potential for a comp pick.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess moving on to the next guy, we are going into the fifth round. And that is where the Ravens took running back Rasheen Ali, I believe, running back out of Marshall. At that point of the draft, I was higher on some other running backs. But there were a number of Ravens.
Talk about which other running backs you wanted. I had some other players I wanted at other positions, but which other running backs would you rather have had at that point?
Oh, man. So somebody that I did like a lot went undrafted. I kept on mentioning him, Blake Watson. I didn't quite realize his age, and I think that's a big reason why he went undrafted. He's already 24, I believe. That shouldn't be the biggest attractor for a running back on day three, because you're really only getting one contract out of these guys. But, you know, undrafted, so what do I know? You know, maybe he's not going to be anything. He went to Denver, but there, Kamani Vidal, I liked a good bit. Garendo had already gone to San Francisco, who you and I both really did like.
Really liked him.
I'm trying to think. I know there's Tracy, I believe. Tyrone Tracy out of Purdue was still available. And I want to say one other guy. Dylan Labe
The receiver, yeah.
The receiving back out of
New Hampshire.
What is it? New Hampshire. And Jaden Sheridan out of Monmouth. All of those guys I was pretty interested in. But Rasheen Ali is a very good player. He was fantastic in 2021. His largest detractors, though, have been his fumbling issues. So he had some serious fumbling issues, I think like six. And that might not be career. That might be in a single season that he had. But he was extremely productive at Marshall. You know, racking up the rushing yards and touchdowns. He's a good receiving back as well, and he also offers pass protection skills, which is rare. So I believe the Ravens see him as an all-around back. I thought that his strength through contact was really good. He kind of reminds me, if we're going to do a Ravens comp, of a Gus Edwards type player with a lot more juice coming out of college. Now, I don't remember a ton about Edwards from Rutgers, but just the pure speed that you can find in his film is definitely different than what you saw from Gus Edwards. However, the strength to push the pile and, you know, fall forward on runs is similar with Ali as it was with Edwards in his NFL career with the Ravens. So he is kind of a power back, but he has some real juice. And you know, another player that's similar to that is who the Ravens just brought in, Derrick Henry. So I do really like what I have seen from Rasheen Ali, and there are plenty of people that were much higher on him going into the draft. So,
okay. Yeah. So I've got probably a few differences of opinion on Ali. That's a very positive take on him, but I'll go through my brief things on him. So 5.5 yards per carry at Marshall. Start with that. That's good. There is a question about context, of course, in terms of where he's coming from and just how much better they were than the rest of their league. One cut runner who fits a stylistic need. So if you had Mitchell back and you have Henry, you have your power and your speed guys taken care of, and having a one cut zone runner, you don't want to give away what the play is by the back who's in the game. So you got to be able to kind of do a little bit of everything. Got to be able to run between the tackles and be a bouncy guy. I think as a one cut runner, it's another stylistic value that the Ravens can gain from. 589 career touches is moderately high tread wear now. So, you know, fifth round player, no problem. One contract player. You're not going to get anything from him on that second contract. If you do sign him, it's probably going to be a very limited 1 or 2 year deal to try and squeeze out another couple of years. But he's not Ray Rice, where you're going to end up paying him a lot of money probably after the first contract. And it's not going to get your comp pick by going somewhere else. So he's a one contract player. And that's what most running backs honestly now should be in the NFL. Right. So if they're watching, you know, how wear works on these guys. Significant shortcomings. He had a very poor Yakko year in 2023 at 2.5 yards per carry, 2.55. He was much better in 21 and 22 when he's at about 3.6 yards. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in between those two numbers is probably the truth. And for him to be a lot of value, it's got to be closer to that 3.6. Edwards was a guy who was significantly higher than that in his career with the Ravens. Not significantly higher than 3.6, but towards that end of end of the scale. He had 27 catches, but only 5.4 yards per target as a receiver. So he wasn't particularly elusive. Sometimes you get that with a back who's less confident. Catching the football takes more time to get turned around and readjust to the field quickly. A lot of dump-offs, obviously. A lot of red yards, probably, in terms of yak there. But and that's not a bad thing. I'm just saying he wasn't used on a ton of wheel routes. I think I did see one on tape for him where he's used on a wheel route, but I didn't see a lot of it for sure. He was not a good pass blocker, and it was against lesser competition in the Sun Belt. That really worries me. Now, Justice Hill learned in a lot of ways how to be a good pass blocker at the NFL level, and I'm hopeful that the Ravens can teach him how to do that. There's other guys, you just can't teach him how to do it. I mean, Keaton Mitchell's too small to be an effective pass blocker. So the Ravens, you know, they have Henry, who's a terrific pass blocker. He uses his size very well. They had Edwards, who was a pretty bad pass blocker, despite really good size. So you could be on opposite ends of the scale, but Hill being a really good pass blocker with smaller size and Edwards being a bad pass blocker and bigger is an odd kind of mix. But you want guys who are good at both so you can play them on obvious passing downs. And Ali, I honestly think, at least to start, he's probably going to be a two-down back for the Ravens, but he could also be a gadget guy that they bring in. You want to use a pony backfield. You have Henry and Ali split wide, or even
you know, defensive coordinator doesn't know what's going on. So you can put them both in the backfield and, mm-hmm. and misdirect that way. It gives them an extra element of misdirection and gadgetry in Ali that they can use early on. I don't think he's going to get a ton of play in his first year. I would expect Hill still to get more snaps than Ali. That can change like that.
Right.
If somebody ends up being productive, as it did with Mitchell, it can also change back like that if somebody starts fumbling.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually have seen both those players do that as well. So you mentioned the running backs you wanted more in round five. To me, I think Ali would have been available the next time they pick. Maybe they think differently. Maybe their models told them differently about who was going to pick them. But if they had, I'm not sure I'd have been all that upset if they had to take the next best available back in the next round. But the four guys who I wanted more at 165 were Javon Solomon of Troy, who was still available, an edge. It would have been a second edge, so you know you have that to consider. Mm-hmm. Keaton Oladapo, the safety from Oregon State. I think he fit more into the cover two mold. At this point, we're out of a lot of the guys who would have been decent cover two guys, but he would have been the one guy I might have trusted with the split field responsibility. I would have loved to get a guard there. There are two available. My consolation prize would have been Trevor Keegan from Michigan, who he's just outside of my honorable mention level of guard, about 11 or 12, I forget which on my list. But Christian Mahogany, obviously injury flags existed. We don't know exactly how serious they are, but he got passed up time round after round after round since, you know, maybe somewhere between round two and three, we expected him to get taken, and he's still there in the fifth round. I think, you know, when you're as far behind the eight ball as the Ravens are on the offensive line right now, that would have been probably a good place to take a chance on the guard. And there might be some people tell you the Ravens didn't have the spot for an extra guard on their team. I don't think anybody's position, there's not players who are so good that you can't knock them off the team. In particular, when you talk about players like Salah,
mm-hmm.
You know, they've lost a number of other interior guys. The Mustafa got signed away. And you know, obviously they lost Zeitler and they lost Simpson.
Yeah, Simpson. Yep.
Yeah. So that's a lot of linemen to replace. And I think if you had a 6-4 competition for that could include Salah, I don't have any problem with that. And in fact, in the fifth round, if they draft a guy who they realize, oh my God, it's just not going to work out, or he's injured the whole year, like Mahogany, I don't think that's a terrible thing. You know, you right. IR him for the whole year. There might even be an opportunity to NFI the player again. At this point, it's not like the fifth round pick is so valuable that you shouldn't consider that as a reasonable, you know, 1 year option. It has value. And by the way, if I'm being a hypocrite, if I say they shouldn't have drafted Ali because I like these other four players better, and then I'm telling you the pick didn't have any value, that's mm-hmm. It's completely hypocritical. I think the pick does have value. But I think if you needed to sit a guy for either all or part of a year, it might not have been a terrible gamble to take on Mahogany.
Yeah, I agree with that. We were kind of all on that train to bring in Mahogany at that point. But yeah, there were definitely running backs that I was more interested in. But I do believe Ali has a number of skills that are complementary and also duplicative of Keaton Mitchell to some extent. And I don't believe Keaton will play very much in this upcoming season, you know, due to his ACL injury in December of last year. So getting a player in the fifth round to fill in and also be a future running back, you know, part of.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, But as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them. Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
That room is perfectly fine with me. I was 100% on board with the Ravens drafting a running back this year, even well prior to the Derrick Henry signing. I thought Baltimore needed to add another back to get younger at the position. And, you know, they added Henry, who is a great player in his own right. But getting a guy here still, you know, it adds to the group. It hopefully raises the floor as well as the ceiling of the running back room.
Okay, very good. Let's move on and talk about the next pick, which I think was one of the really puzzling ones in the draft, and that's Devin Leary, the quarterback of Kentucky. The first guy outside of the top 10 to come off the board in my on my list. So we did have Spencer Rattler taken ahead of that, and two other guys. I'm not sure. I have to look at my board, but let's not do that. Devin Leary.
Pratt. Pratt is still available, I believe.
And was Travis the other guy who came off the board?
Jordan Travis, yes. I believe he had come off the board.
All right. So that would have been eight. I'm thinking there's nine off, but whatever. Anyway, Devin Leary, Kentucky, had been a good player early in his career, obviously battle-tested in the SEC after 4 years at NC State. So 25 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, 88.7 passer rating. It is a very tough league. It's a quadruple A kind of level of football there. They're playing, and in his previous 4 years at NC State, 62 touchdowns and 16 interceptions. So that's the kind of ratio you want in a draftable quarterback. We obviously saw that in a number of the top guys this year. Still a very interesting pick. I don't know what pressure they felt in drafting a quarterback that they thought Devin Leary was going to be taken, because given his 2023 year, I didn't see a lot of buzz about him. I did notice he's a consensus number 235 pick.
Yeah, it's not a ringing endorsement, but certainly showed a lot of potential at NC State. Going in as a Georgia fan, going into 2023, there was certainly buzz about Kentucky, you know, possibly being a stronger team than they had been, you know, with Leary coming in there, and it just did not work out. He did not have a good season at Kentucky. They were pretty abysmal. I don't really believe that the complementary pieces on that offense were special and allowed him to flourish. You know, Kentucky probably has fallen down the totem pole a little bit in how well they have recruited and perhaps coached in the SEC in that competition with the SEC East teams like Georgia and Tennessee and Florida and the likes. So I think the Ravens really just wanted to add another able-bodied passer to their quarterback room. And from the accounts of John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta, he's not even in competition to be QB2, which is a little odd that you would draft somebody, you know, in that range to not have a chance, but you know, anything could happen. Maybe he has a chance, but Josh Johnson is kind of in ink as quarterback two right now, and Leary is lined up to be a developmental quarterback as the QB3. as an older prospect in Baltimore. So it was a head scratcher. Not a lot of people were really happy about it, but he does show you, you know, some real tools as a passer. I don't know really much else to say about the player other than he went downhill in 2023, but you know, was better earlier in his college career.
So I guess two things about that come to mind. The first is, in terms of when the payoff has to occur for a player like this, he'll be, you know, presumably he'll beat out Malik Cunningham for the third QB job. If that does not happen and he gets relegated to the practice squad, he could very well be taken by somebody else who wants a third QB. And then the draft pick is really a failure if that occurs. If he stays as the three, then I'd say he needs to knock Josh Johnson out of the number two role by the beginning of 2025 at the latest. I'd actually be happy if it was sometime in 24, where they like what they see in practice, and all of a sudden they switch the two and the three quarterbacks, and Johnson is the guy who can only come in as the third quarterback under emergency circumstances and whatnot, and they think Leary is a guy. The other thing organizationally is something that Jordan Coe is the author of this thought originally, and I kind of like it as a thought, is if you have a backup quarterback under the nuclear scenario where Lamar Jackson goes down, you'd rather have a quarterback who gives you a very different look. And with Tyler Huntley, they had an accurate quarterback who probably is a little bit different, but there's still a lot of RPOs and still a lot of reliance on Huntley to run, which did not really work out. Not a particularly wiggly player, not a good leverage reader at all. And Leary is not going to be that at all. There's no pretense of him being that. He's a pure pocket passer. And you know, the Ravens then become a team that's more difficult to scout because you haven't seen them with Leary before. So you don't have your normal advanced scouting process where maybe you look at the last four games. And if he's replacing Lamar Jackson, then you have to all of a sudden be concerned about a pocket passer instead of an RPO guy. I think it's harder to plan for what Jackson is, obviously.
Right.
But at least it's a difference of look that you get. And Josh Johnson, I don't really feel like he's given the Ravens – too much of that. He's different. I mean, he's not the runner that Jackson is, obviously. But I think that he doesn't give them enough different in terms of a look as a quarterback like Leary would. I think that's a positive. I could see how it would be a positive, and that's why I don't absolutely hate the pick. I just think that they probably would have had him at 228, and there was one guy I really wanted instead of him at that point. Did you have a guy you wanted?
I mean, I believe Mahogany was still there. So
if he was, definitely would have wanted him. And I'll have to look where Mahogany was drafted. But Trey Taylor of Air Force was drafted 223 by the Raider. And he would have really been a great asset to put on the back end. Not a guy I really studied going into this. And somebody clued me into the fact that on Twitter that he won the Jim Thorpe Award and he won it over Cooper DeJean. And, you know, it's a good interview. The Ravens apparently interviewed him at some point during the process here. I'm at a loss to understand why, with the incredible dearth of back-end safety talent the Ravens have right now, that they didn't take a chance on a player like that. And, you know, quarterback's an important position, and backup quarterback's an important position. But if Lamar is injured for more than two games, the season's in a lot of trouble no matter who you have.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. So I really do like that idea as well. And I hope that Leary can become that QB2. If that can happen during the season, then I'll be much happier with the pick. But certainly he offers a different skill set than Lamar Jackson. And you know, hopefully that would be a challenge for opposing teams if they had to face him in any sort of scenario. Hopefully it would be, you know, the Ravens have won the division and they're about to play Pittsburgh in week 17, week 18, and, you know, one of those situations again. But, I think there's potential, but it was a little bit early to take a quarterback that I don't know how many people were super high on him.
All right, wonderful. First of all, before we move on, is my mic volume okay right now?
That's good.
Okay, thanks. So we'll get to their first pick of the seventh round. They didn't have to wait too long. It was only 10 picks before they selected again at number 228 and took Nick Samak of Michigan State, who's a center. I think there's obviously hope that he could move out to guard, where he's a little smallish for that position at 6'4", 307. Obviously, we need to grow into that a little bit. Kind of a slow-footed guy at 5'25 on the 40. But I looked at it and I said, yeah, this is a guy who really reminds me of Bradley Bozeman a little bit, a guy who was not an athlete coming out of college. In fact, was there's certain players, this happens in baseball all the time, they seem to go, announcers seem to go out of their way to talk about how they don't have good speed, even when they're young players. So a guy like Cal Ripken, they went right after him right away. Brooks Robinson, you know, I only saw him later in his career, and he was always talked about as being a very slow player. But when young players that they do that to, say, well, that's, not a lot of speed on the bases right now, kind of thing. Bradley Bozeman, they did that to right out of school. And then they moved him to left guard and they made him an outstanding puller. So it may be that Samak is a guy who can do a lot of that and be coached up by Joe D. I do like the reports that I see. And here's the big one, that he makes reach blocks very well and has the ability to pull. The Ravens use a lot of very shallow angles on their zone blocking and counterplays, or counterplays really in particular. So let me talk about what I mean here. You vacate a spot. If you're the center and the guard and tackle vacate their spots, your responsibility is to get back and get that either defensive tackle or defensive end that's a gap away from you. I think of it as a reach block. It's really a cut-off block where you're going backwards, not to the play side. Ravens might run their play to that side. They might not, but it's a block you need to make by making a very low angle. Now, you can't go so low if zero is right at the line of scrimmage that you are running into the players who are pulling in the other direction. So you've got a footwork issue there. What's really important is economy of that first step. And that's something Joe D teaches extremely well. If you watch him teach offensive line play, he's a one rep at a time guy, and he really wants to make sure people are making that first step, not wasting motion initially. And that's why the Ravens have had in recent years centers who weren't, losing ground and creating footwork issues. So I think Santa could be that guy in terms of a guy who is good on the backside of a counter play or on any other time where there's a guard who pulls alone where he has to then fill space. Positive about that.
Yeah, I haven't really watched too much of him yet, but from what I have seen, I would agree, kind of a physical player, likes to get after it. The kind of guy that the Ravens really do like to take in the draft, somebody that plays through the whistle. And that potential for him to develop into not only a backup to Tyler Linderbaum, who would certainly be a different look with that lack of athleticism, but just somebody that can be a valuable asset snapping the football, somebody that hopefully we wouldn't have to worry about in exchanges with Lamar. That's a plus in and of itself, but the potential, down the road, year two, assuming that he can make the roster, for him to develop into a swing guy that can play some guard as well would be a really nice, valuable addition to the roster, especially when, they take swings at offensive linemen every year and a lot of them don't work out. This one does have potential, and it's nice that he's already a former center. I just think that certainly helps when you lose a guy like Sam Mustipher, who was, looks pretty good in his limited time covering for Linderbaum. So hopefully Samak can do something similar, and we're going to get a look at it in the preseason.
Yeah, so that'll be one of the fun times we get to look at these guys, because we won't see them all regular season if things hopefully work out. Mm-hmm. I really don't want to see him at guard, particularly as a rookie. There's an NFL weight room kind of thing that he's got to go through himself, which is important. Just grow into your own body at this age and get better. Thought to be a little bit of a mauler in the run game, but I think that's primarily for a center. Is the prepositional phrase you need to add to that sentence is that I think he gives you a little bit more than a lot of centers in terms of ability to displace, and particularly when he's using a double team, he's going to help you there. But I don't see him as a guy who's going to be particularly good lined up against a three tech at guard. And I also think that's the guy you target immediately if he's in there at guard with your matchups there. So, I think one of the good things you get is McCary is able to stay at left tackle as a left tackle backup and not have to be a center backup. Mm-hmm. He really wouldn't want that. So hopefully he gets a lot of playing time in the preseason. The shotgun snaps are clean. And we see a player who we want to have out there if anything were to happen on Linderbaum, which would be devastating, obviously, at this team.
Right.
Yep. Let's move.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you have anything to say about him? Otherwise, we'll move on.
No, let's move on.
Okay. So Sanusi Kane, the safety from Purdue, taken with the 250th pick. It's really hard to be upset about somebody who's that close to Mr. Irrelevant, and he's only seven picks away. Right. I still didn't like the pick. I didn't think it really addressed the kind of safety that the Ravens needed in this draft. Tell me what you thought of it, and I'll go to some other stuff.
Yeah, so I hadn't watched him prior to the pick. You know, when you get that late on day seven, you're in rare air if you know all of the guys. Yeah, he is certainly not the split safety that you were clamoring for. I think all of us want a Geno Stone replacement, especially since he went to Cincinnati, and we like Kyle Hamilton having that ability to roam and play in the nickel just move all over the field, to be honest. And adding somebody that's a little bit more limited as a box safety thumper type is not the most valuable thing. It's not the worst. I do feel like there was a spot for the Ravens to add somebody that wasn't a true single high or split safety threat. It's very limiting on your roster when your safety can't do those things. So I also wasn't the biggest fan, but the guy is darn near the very last pick in the entire draft, Mr. Irrelevant. And I would not be surprised if the Ravens end up cutting this guy and keeping an undrafted person, because they're so close together that there's not really much difference, except for one is considered a draft pick and one isn't.
You get the advantage of signing the guy for 4 years instead of having to pay him RFA money in year four. Mm-hmm. And Kane is a guy, I love that they're only calling him Citizen Kane, by the way. That's good. I think a lot of people's memory of that movie now, given the fact it's like 84 years since it came out, comes from The Simpsons, who parodied it shot after shot all the way through their history. But it's a good one. Kane is a guy who is, to me, purely a dime prospect, not even really a strong safety prospect. He's definitely not a split field guy. Coverage right. Metrics are really bad, 9.8 yards per target and a 109.2 opposition passer rating. So I don't see him as being a guy who plays the back end. I think he'll be a special teams player. I think that's what they got him mm-hmm. for. I think he's a four-unit core special teams player that they'll have on the roster when they have space. And a guy who probably loses a game day activation to a player like Darryl Worley, who can do more for you on defense than he can, and also play four units of special teams for you.
Right. That doesn't sound terrible. To get at the very end of the seventh round. I mean, that should be the bare minimum when you're talking about special teams value in a guy just doing that. But the Ravens have certainly, kept roster spots for guys in similar situations prior. There are plenty of players that you can kind of look at throughout even recent Ravens history that have been, completely primary special teams players that have done, you know, very little on defense. And that kind of seems like what he would be as well. I mean, you talk about the special team ace that they got from New England that kind of bounced around. I think he might have gone to Atlanta at one
Slater?
Point.
Kelly Washington.
Yes, might have been
receiver.
Washington.
Third down receiver, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember some of the guys recently, but yeah, one of the guys that the Ravens had was, you know, a DB that could kind of play back end safety, but not really, and he was just, you know, a dedicated special teamer. You know, he was the guy in 2022 maybe, or 2021, where they had him for a portion of the year, and then just they
Bethel,
that was it.
So they cut him because they had to for some sort of a contractual reason before week 10, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it reminds me of that. And I'm sure Bethel was a better player earlier in his career and perhaps did more than just special teams. But at that point, he was known as a special team ace. And the Ravens do like their special teams. And perhaps with the return game being a larger part on paper in this upcoming year, they wanted to really solidify their coverage unit, because I do think that was a little bit of a weakness in 2023. I don't know how you felt, but special teams wasn't quite up to par in my opinion. And you know, that could be a silver lining element to this last pick.
Yeah, that's a really good point, you know, because we don't know how much that came into their thinking. So it's fair to say that I'm giving short shrift to a player like Kane, who probably brings that. Has not been a great tackler in his career, by the way. His missed tackle rate improved to 13.2%, which is average for a safety, but his career rate is still about 15.5%, which is poor. So not ideal. Your safety, it's really important they be able to tackle. They actually had some problems. Geno Stone gave a bunch of picks last year, and honestly, was great about reducing responsibility for the front end guys, but he also missed a bunch of tackles. Mm-hmm. And that hurt the Ravens some in this last year. And I think it was one of the reasons why his market value didn't really explode. Or, I mean, it's definitely one of the reasons he didn't win defensive player of the month in October when he had four picks. He certainly could have won it, but they gave it to some Jets player instead. Part of the problem was missed tackles by Stone. He didn't help his case.
Right.
All right. Well, great to go through this with you. Just a pleasure again going through the draft, and obviously a great pleasure having you on for the draft shows, and you do a great job with those and being prepared. Thanks again for all the work you did on the running backs, especially. I thought that was one of the really strong pre-draft countdown shows that we did, and I really enjoyed doing that with you. Folks where they can talk football.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, or X as they call it now, at Real Jake Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. And I am always talking Ravens and Georgia football, as well as some fantasy football. So any sort of NFL or college football stuff, I usually have my hands in that.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to go to a film study short, this is that time of year. We got lots of time for film study shorts now. The draft is over, so we're going to look forward to two players. So that's a show where we look forward to the role of two players in the 2024 Ravens, and you'll get a specific pairing. You don't pick your own players. You have to pick your own pairing, but not your own players specifically. I'll hand out those pairings, and I'll get you to choose from them. But if you want to be part of that process, send me a note. DMs are always open on Twitter, as you know by now. Also, if you would like to do a recollections series on a particular player from the past, still doing those. We're going to be doing those pretty much all the way up until camp opens, and we'll have them as a major part of content every week, a couple shows at least. I want to hear from you on that. In particular, if your dad or your older cousin or older brother or whoever wants to talk about a pre-2000 Raven in particular, I'm looking for guys to do those shows more than any. I want to thank you guys again for listening. Jake, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.